Hey, Clownties. Before we get to this week's episode, we're excited to tell you about our sponsor. Thank you to Podcorn for supporting Counter Programming.
Podcorn is a marketplace that connects podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities, such as host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. If you have a podcast and you're trying to figure out how to recoup some of the costs of production, Podcorn is a legit solution.
Podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform. They can set their own rates and collaborate with brands directly. And they've got such great advertisers on their platform. Mattress companies, coffee clubs, lingerie companies, and so much more.
Ariel, who's your dream advertiser for our show? Speak it into existence, baby.
The first thing that came to my mind was a kombucha company. I would love kombucha just like sent to my door, and then we could talk about how much we love it. How about you?
I do love kombucha, but I feel like for counter programming, maybe the Negroni distillery.
Ooh, that would be good.
But we kind of shit on their product.
Yeah, it's okay. Check out our last episode for that one. And I'd also have to say that I think a very good advertiser would be a kitchen countertop company because of our series on countertops.
Ooh, we've used Podcorn for a few of our ads, and we love the flexibility as well as the ability to make a little cash. Thanks, Podcorn.
Thanks, Podcorn. You can learn more and sign up for a free account by going to podcorn.com. That's PODCORN.com. We'll also have that link for you in the show notes of this episode.
Now on to the show.
All right. We have a special guest on today's episode, and she's going to introduce us to this episode. Go ahead.
Hi, welcome to Counter Programming with Shira and Ariel. I'm Margo, and we're recording in Los Angeles, California.
Good job, Margo.
Great job, Margo.
Full disclosure, Margo is my sister. She just graduated from college. We're so proud of her. Good job, Margo.
Woohoo! What's Binghamton's mascot again?
Bearcats. Go Bearcats.
Go Bearcats.
Bearcats!
What's a Bearcat?
No one knows.
No one knows.
Just so everybody knows, for full disclosure, Margo and I are recording in our living room as opposed to my closet because we needed a little bit more space. So if it sounds a little more cavernous, that's why. But we're so excited to have Margo here. She's going to help us with today's episode.
So excited to be here.
I'm so excited to see you virtually, Margo.
I'm excited to see you too, Shira.
Sherelle.
Well, Counties, it's finally time. Welcome to Counter Programming with Shira and Ariel. Today, we discuss Count Olaf.
This is a huge deal. We have teased it in so many episodes up till now. And it's finally here, and we finally understand who Count Olaf is. In this podcast, we bring you Counter Programming. We are a distraction cast. We believe that while it's important to acknowledge the pandemic, we also understand that it's very anxiety-inducing. That's where we come in. For this 30-ish minute podcast, we bring you
Counter Programming.
Nice.
Great job, Marco. That's right. We discuss anything with count or counter in the title. This week, Count Olaf. Head on back, though, to our episode archive to learn about the census, aka people counters, staff counters, countertops, and so much more.
Counties, we'd love to hear from you about counter topics you'd like for us to explore. You can send us an email at counterprogrammingshiraariel@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram at counterprogrammingpod. We know you have a favorite counter. We just know it.
Before we start, Shira, how are ya?
I'm good. I had a weirdly busy Sunday afternoon, all virtual events. This morning I attended a 305 fitness dance class fundraiser that my friend Sasha organized called Dance for Diplomas to raise money for United Negro College Fund. And then I just attended a book club meeting, and now we're here.
That is such a good day.
It felt like old times. Like, yeah. I did things that I would do normally, like with people I would want to do them with. It just was virtual. And that is what we're working with now. So
that's our new reality. So good job flowing with it.
Thank you. How has your day been, ladies?
We slept late.
Love that.
So Margo's visiting because us Nissen Black gals, Nissen chicks, if you will. You've never heard that?
I don't think I've heard Nissen Chicks.
We have sweatshirts.
Yeah, we have sweatshirts that say Nissen Chicks World Tour.
Did your mom come up with that?
No.
No, because she's an adopted Nissen Chick.
I just feel like County Rachel is that kind of creative, though.
Eh.
No? Okay.
It was an Ellen.
It was an Ellen Mindy thing.
Oh, Ellen.
Shout out to my aunt.
I love County.
So Margo's here. Margo's here because we're embarking on Nissen Chicks World Tour part whatever. And we're driving across the United States of America.
Los Estados Unidos.
Yes, very true.
Vámonos.
Cross country?
Yes, precisely.
Yeah, and guess where we're going?
Well, I know.
Yeah, we're going to Mount Rushmore. Granite!
Oh, I didn't realize you were stopping at Mount Rushmore. I didn't know. I thought you meant where your final destination was.
Our final destination is the great state of New York, the Empire State. But on our way, we're stopping at a lot of amazing places, including Mount Rushmore, which, you know, while we're there and beforehand, we're going to do a lot of research because while it's fun to check out, it also is problematic because it was sacred land of the natives. Yeah, so we'll talk about that later. But just another thing is that two nights ago, I watched the movie Free Solo. Have you seen it?
Is that the one where he like goes climbing by him?
It's shocking.
I haven't seen it.
It's really good. It's an entire granite cliff face. So it's really cool. So
yeah. Oh, wow.
So I'm going to check out. But Margo, how are you? How are things?
Things are good. I'm happy to be in California.
What's that?
I don't know. And I'm very excited to be recording with you.
Yay!
And soon to be embarking on a new adventure.
Wow.
What a sister road called? Trip. She is. She has a great voice for podcasts, just like you.
We have the same voice.
Do we?
Yes.
You have similar voices.
Maybe we should, just so that the counties know who's who, why don't you give us, we'll both say the same sentence so that people can distinguish. So let the sentence be, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You go now.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Okay, so yeah, there we go.
Perfect.
Sheer, do you know who's who now?
I think I do. I hope the counties do. I was listening to an episode of Sibling Revelry, which is Kate Hudson and her brother Oliver Hudson's podcast. They interviewed Uzo Aduba and her sister, and they sound identical. And they like joked about it at the beginning that no one would be able to tell the difference the whole time.
Wow.
And yeah, I had a lot of trouble. Like you had to know this, you had to listen to the stories to know who was who.
That's good to know. I think it's time to build a snowman. It's Olaf time. And the first thing we'll say is that that is not a reference that makes sense because Count Olaf is very different from Olaf from Frozen.
Totally. But I do think it's important for us to mention that when we first conceived of the idea for this week's topic of Olaf, we were thinking of Olaf from Frozen.
Yeah. So we've learned a lot in the intervening few weeks. Let's distinguish once and for all. Who is Olaf from Frozen? Here is a definition from frozen.disney.com.
Created from Elsa's magical powers, Olaf is by far the friendliest snowman in Arendelle. He is innocent, outgoing, and loves all things summer. Olaf may be a bit naive, but his sincerity and good-natured temperament make him a true friend to Anna and Elsa.
Yeah, definitely different from what I've learned about Count Olaf.
Yeah, they're not even, I actually tried to look up, like, is there any similarity?
Like, why did they choose the same name? Yeah.
Exactly, but I don't know. It seemed very different people.
Now let's talk about Count Olaf.
Sheer and Ariel have done a few episodes on counts of various historical periods. Count Dracula, Count Von Count, Count Negroni. But what the heck is actually a count?
Yeah, what's a count?
That's a great question, Margo.
Will you tell us the definition?
I'd be happy to enlighten. So a count is a historical title of nobility in certain Eastern European countries, varying in relative status, generally of middling rank in the hierarchy of nobility. The etymologically related English term county denoted the land owned by a count, which I feel silly that I didn't know that. I feel like you must have, Ariel, because you
Perfect
love counties.
Breath.
You love counties.
Yeah.
Not just our counties.
No, literally, like lines in states that define counties are very exciting for me.
Let's see what else is in the definition. Equivalents of the rank of counts exist or have existed in the nobility structures of non-European countries, such as Hakushaku during the Japanese imperial era.
Now, Shira, we don't often do this, but I thought it'd be fun to do some etymology. We've talked about counts before, but we haven't discussed where the word count comes from. Let's do it. Margo, would you like to read the definition?
The word count came to English from the French word compte, which comes from the Latin word comes. Excuse me if I'm butchering the pronunciation. In its accusative form of comitem, which has the meaning companion, and later companion of the emperor, delegate of the emperor. The adjective form of the word is comital. The British and Irish equivalent is an earl.
Oh, I've heard that.
Whose wife is a countess,
ooh,
for lack of an English term. In the late Roman Empire, the Latin title comes denoted the high rank of various courtiers and provincial officials, either military or administrative, before Anthemius became emperor in the West in 467. He was military comes, charged with strengthening defenses on the Danube frontier.
Danube. It's a river.
Margo's crushing it. She's crushing it.
You did it! Congratulations!
We were actually talking last night. We were watching, well, spoiler alert, everybody. Margo and I and my roommates watched a series of unfortunate events last night, and we'll talk about that shortly. But we were talking about, both of my roommates had read the books and watched the movie, and we were thinking, like, Margo and I, we did not read the books. We didn't read Harry Potter. We didn't read really any series growing up.
Percy Jackson.
None. Is that a big one?
Yeah.
We didn't read any of those things. And it's not because we didn't know how to read, but it's not because I was definitely not a confident reader for many moons.
My mom says that I just didn't really like reading, which I've been trying to change during quarantine.
That's what I've been attempting to do it. I think it's an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Back to etymology.
After butchering that sentence.
Account is a word that has origins in many languages, each differing slightly because of the role of the count differed slightly from place to place, which I think is cool.
Well, since we're talking about etymology, I thought we could look into the etymology of the name Olaf.
I love that idea.
Yeah. So what I found was that it's from the Old Norse name Alifer, meaning ancestor's descendant, derived from the element a new ancestor and Lifer, descendant. And this was the name of five different kings of Norway, including Saint Olaf, who was formerly Olaf II.
I love that. So, yeah.
Well, because I was trying to find a connection between Count Olaf and Olaf the Snowman. And I was like, maybe this word means something. But based on what I've read about the snowman and about the count, I'm thinking that it doesn't really have to do with ancestors' descendant, and
no,
it doesn't have to do.
Well, the whole movie, the whole Lemony Snicket series seems to be like this pseudo-European dark kind of times of yore, but not really. So I feel like Olaf is a good creepy name.
Yeah. Maybe it's something about like the sound. Like, I feel like there aren't a lot of English words that we use that sound like end in an, I don't know, that have that sound of like Olaf.
It's not aggressive.
Yeah, it sounds distinctly non-American.
Yeah.
What is up with Count Olaf? I think it's important to note that he is a fictional character, Count Olaf. He comes from the classic book series, as we just mentioned, Lemony Snicket, A Series of Unfortunate Events. Shira, have you ever read A Series of Unfortunate Events?
I have not read or seen them. I watched the trailers last night for the movie and the TV show, but I didn't dive into watching them, you know?
Yeah, I bought the book when I was little. It was a nice book. It was like not just your typical, I don't even know what a typical book looks like, but it had thick pages. It was like really, and like even cool mystery things that you could do within the book. Mm. Do you know it? Did you ever see it in our house?
Certainly not.
Yeah, certainly no reading over here. So I definitely bought it thinking, maybe this is it. Maybe you'll get into reading.
She did not.
Yeah. Young Ariel, but you didn't. So I just had the book.
But then you guys watched the movie last night.
Yes, we watched the movie last night. We bought it on YouTube.com, $2.99. So I'm going to write that off on my taxes. So, we enjoyed it. We were drinking a lot of wine.
We got some expert testimony from Ariel's roommates.
Yeah. Yeah, we had so they explained the movie to us beforehand. And then throughout the movie, every time we were confused, which was often, they explained. So we have some really good context with which to jump into the following discussion. So let's do it. Let's do a quick synopsis of the series according to Wikipedia.
You want to alternate bullets?
Alternate bullets. Let's go Margot, Shira, Ariel.
I love that.
A Series of Unfortunate Events is a series of 13 novels.
It was... were you going next for me? Sorry, I already fucked up the order.
You go.
It was written by American author Daniel Handler under the pen name Lemony Snicket. Pause. What would your pen names be?
I already have one because I have written under a pen name.
Can you tell us or will it spoil
No, it's
then?
Fine. It's fine. Okay. It was Arlene Daly. Isn't that good?
What was it for? It's really good.
In high school, I was part of the literary magazine and I wanted to write poems and I thought I was really deep, but I didn't want anybody to know that it was me, but I was not deep at all. You know what I mean? Like they were just so dumb.
I found an article I wrote for our school newspaper recently while I was cleaning out my room and I was like on the floor laughing at how just like deep I thought I was.
Yeah. I think we all went through that. We were all like, oh, I have hardship. Here it is. Let me put it on paper.
Oh, okay.
Terrible. It's really just teenage angst.
Angst.
Angst is the German way to pronounce angst. And I think it's way better. Really conveys how you're feeling. Angst. Try it.
Angst.
Angst.
It does.
Anyway.
It does convey the angst better. Okay.
Do you have a pen name?
I always wrote under my own name, but if I needed a pen name, I don't know.
Ariel Nissenblatt, probably. What about you, Margo?
My first thought is an alter ego that I have of Annie Mall.
What?
Like animal.
How do you call
Mall? M-A-L. Or M-A-H-L.
Is it A-N-N-I-E or A-N-I?
Originally, it was A-N-I, but I think in this case, I would go for A-N-N-I-E.
Yeah. In a literary situation, it would have to be Annie.
And then I think M-A-H-L.
Or M-A-L-L-E, Mall.
Ooh.
Yeah, it sounds French.
Yeah, I'll take
Mall, it. M-A-H-L, is Jewish.
Or German.
True. Anyway.
German.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Woo.
Next bullet point.
We're back.
The books are classified as children's novels, but the books often have a dark, mysterious feeling to them.
They've been classified as postmodern and metafictional writing.
Makes sense.
The books follow the turbulent lives of Violet, Klaus, and Sunny Baudelaire.
Yeah.
Baudelaire? Okay. Of Violet, Klaus, and Sunny Baudelaire. I don't know why that makes so much trouble.
It's a hard one.
After their parents' death in a fire, the children are placed in the custody of a murderous relative, Count Olaf. Who attempts to steal their inheritance and later orchestrates numerous disasters with the help of his accomplices as the children attempt to flee.
In the first six books, Olaf disguises himself, finds the children with help from many accomplices, and he tries to steal their fortune. He commits arson, murder, and other crimes. In the 8th through 12th books, the orphans adopt disguises while on the run from the police after Count Olaf frames them for one of his murders. So the movie that we watched apparently only covers the first three novels. So that was news to me. Very exciting.
That is a great number of books that children read.
Yeah. I mean, that's more books than I think I've ever read.
The books seem to be set in an alternate timeless world with stylistic similarities to both the 19th century and the 1930s, though with contemporary and seemingly anachronistic scientific knowledge.
Sorry that I'm reading it with you.
Yeah. I would
like you're in third grade.
That you don't.
It feels like, you know, at Seder, I don't know if your family does this.
She said, I would request that you don't.
But my family will all take turns reading from the Haggadah. And then there will be like a younger kid at the Seder who's like having trouble with some of the big words in the Haggadah. And like all the adults around are like, anachronistic.
Yeah.
Like, whispering, but it's one table.
You're not being sly. Anyway, yes, I will echo that it did feel like a timeless.
We were trying to figure out where also physically on a map it might be placed. But the only location that they mentioned that we noticed was that, what was that character's name? The uncle who was
Mr. Poe?
The one who
wanted
to take them to Peru.
Yeah. I forget. Monty.
We liked him. Yes, Monty.
I feel like sometimes that's easier to imagine a fake place, like as opposed to Harry Potter that goes in and out of London, but then also is like in this magical world, that this is just, you don't have to picture something that you already know. You're just like, in this world that Lemony Snicket is creating.
Yeah. It doesn't function like reality.
And Peru is somewhere around it.
Yeah.
Somewhere it exists.
Yeah, they do. They do try to go to Peru at one point. Oh, now that we have those bullet points out of the way, why don't we play a quick game? Daniel, cue the music.
We haven't played a game in so long. I actually am so excited to hear the game music.
Yes, me too. It has been a while. Gets me going. So here's how it's going to work. Since I have seen the movie, Margot's seen the movie, we are going to read one of Count Olaf's disguises, and you, Sherelle, you will decide if it's a disguise from the book or one that we just made up. Does that sound good?
Okay, I love that.
Count Olaf's first disguise is named Shirley.
That seems a little too simple to me for that to be one of his disguises based on what I saw in the trailer. So I'm going to say no.
You mean just the idea that he decided to be a woman named Shirley?
Yeah, I feel like he's like more sinister.
Delia. So no, he really did dress up as Shirley. Shirley was the female receptionist of Dr. Georgina Orwell during the Baudelaire's stay in Paltryville. To conceal the eye tattoo on Shirley's ankle, Count Olaf dressed up as Shirley, wore very long stockings. So let's mention that. So one of the ways that the Baudelaire kids always knew that it was Count Olaf is that he had this weird tattoo on his ankle. And in multiple disguises, he was able to conceal it, so that would confuse the kids. But it looks like in this case, Shirley did conceal with long stockings. Her name is often cited as Shirley T. Sinnoh Passer, spelling receptionist backwards, but she was officially renamed to Shirley T. Ives in the TV series.
Okay, so I understand why you would expect not, because that does seem a little less elaborate than he, Count Olaf, would go for. But next up we have Detective Lupin.
I'm gonna say he did not dress... No, he definitely would have dressed up as a detective to try to get more information.
This one is a little confusing. So he did have a disguise called Detective Dupin. Get it? Because, like, you duped ya. Yeah, that's right.
Ah, cute.
But Lupin was from Harry Potter. Detective Dupin was a scatting, smooth-talking detective with an affinity for things that are cool, and I'm making air quotes.
Okay.
Ooh,
tricky.
Next up, we have Jessica Haircut.
That sounds too ridiculous for you to have made up. So, yes.
It's true. In the TV series, Olaf improvises the disguise Jessica Haircut to convince Mr. Poe, who had a haircut scheduled that day, to grant him custody of the Baudelaire children prior to the events of The Bad Beginning.
Wow.
Which you'll just have to see the movie to understand.
I know. Maybe I'll watch it tonight. I need a haircut, though. That's what that makes me think of.
Me too. And the last one.
Steven.
Well, I guessed no for Shirley, and then he did dress up as Shirley, so I'll guess, yeah, why wouldn't he be a Steven?
Wrong. It's Stefano. Ooh, yeah, I remember this from the movie. Stefano was a herpetologist lab assistant to the Baudelaire second guardian, Dr. Montgomery Montgomery, whom he later murders. In order to conceal his identity, Stefano speaks in a ridiculous Italian accent and has a bald head, shaved eyebrows, and a long, scraggly beard. Stefano. So those are a bunch of the disguises that Count Olaf pulls off throughout the Lemony Snicket books. Great job, Shira.
I don't know if that was my best game that we've played, but I tried.
I'll give you a prize anyway. Here it is.
Oh, thank you.
Let's now go into some of the adaptations of A Series of Unfortunate Events. We've already spoken about the movie, which came out in 2004, and it starred Jim Carrey as Count Olaf. He was perfect, by the way.
Really?
He is so good. He's so...
magical.
He's so smart. He's just such a... His facial expressions are unbelievable. So there's that one. And then, of course, there's the books, how 12, 13, Baker's Dozen, who knows. And then, of course, there is the Netflix series that came out in 2017 and stars Neil Patrick Harris as Olaf. I watched a trailer. He was so sweet. He was so excited about the role.
I know.
One of Ariel's roommates told us that that performance of Olaf as Count Olaf is a bit more theatrical and musical, which fitting for Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
I thought the trailer for the TV show looked better, but I love Neil Patrick Harris, and so that might be why. Plus, there are all these cameos from famous people, like Meryl Streep.
Well, Meryl Streep is also in the movie.
Wow.
There were so many famous people in the movie.
Okay, maybe I will watch the movie then.
It was really impressive.
I saw a very interesting insider article that the director of the Netflix series was supposed to be the director of the movie originally, but he ended up getting like kicked off because of like producer politics. And his name is Barry Sonnenfeld. And he felt that the movie focused too much on Jim Carrey as Count Olaf and not enough on the children. And so that was something he was consciously changing in this TV series.
The movie was definitely, I thought it was, the main character was Count Olaf. Whereas apparently in the book, it's the kids.
Right.
But right? Didn't you get that sense?
Yes.
He's probably, it's just such a more exciting character to write when you're watching it on TV. So,
and it's also because, I don't know, Count Olaf, Jim Carrey as Count Olaf was amazing. I kept thinking like, they filmed him from such weird angles and he did such strange hand motions and facial motions. And I was like, they're letting him do whatever the hell he wants here.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
That he was like in his prime then.
So I think the biggest part of the movie, and I imagine not so much with the TV series or the book, it really did focus on Count Olaf. So here's my question, Shira, for us to close out on.
Mm-hmm.
What would your disguise be in order to steal a fortune?
Oh.
And what fortune would you steal? It can be from Jeff Bezos. It can be from Trump. But I don't think I even want Trump's.
No. I don't. Oh, these kind of questions stress me out.
I know what I would do.
I don't think I would do something illegal to steal a fortune.
I would dress up like a mediocre white man and just enter a regular office job, move up the ranks, even though I don't have any real skills. And then, I don't know, make a fortune, probably.
You could even become president of the United States with that disguise.
Total respect for Donald Trump and for Donald Trump's very, very large brain.
I could. Shira, have you thought of something?
Oh.
Margo, any ideas? What fortune would you steal?
I'm such a goody-goody. I don't think I could come up with something.
It's true. You got very nervous during our counterfeit episode.
Oh my God, the counterfeit episode still gives me stress.
I still am looking for my scam, so if anybody's got anything, let me know. Anyway.
All right, counties. Let's head out, Ariel.
Let's head out. Okay, counties, we are heading out. But before we do, we need your voice. At the beginning of the episode, you heard from County Margot, who introduced us to the show. She welcomed us to the show. You can be that type of famous, too. All you have to do is record a voice clip on your phone and send it to counterprogrammingshiraariel@gmail.com. Shira, what should that voice clip sound like?
Hi, I'm Shira, recording from New York, and you're listening to Counter Programming with Shira and Ariel.
Crushed it week after week. You always
crush it. Oh, thank you.
And now it's time for our thank you section. Thank you, as always, to our amazing sound engineer, Daniel Turek. Find his work and get in touch at robotslap.com. Margo, slap me. Robotslap.com. He's the one in charge of all these perfectly placed sound effects.
A few of my county friends reached out and were like, the sound effect when Ariel was talking about cannibalism was so much.
Yeah, it really was.
We love it, Daniel.
Yeah, so in our last episode, what was that, our last episode?
Yeah, it was in Count Negroni.
Oh, yeah, because I brought up the Donner Party, even though it had no relevance.
Our music that you're listening to now is by Jason Shaw. The song is called Tennessee Hayride, and we love it.
We'll catch you next week, counties. What should we cover next week, Ariel and Shira?
So you brought this up to me, Shira. I'm feeling Count Chocula.
Okay.
My experience with Count Chocula is The Office, where Dwight likes the cereal Count Chocula.
I honestly hadn't heard of it until a county suggested it, and I did some research and saw and learned more about the cereal. So I'm excited to learn.
Yeah. And we'll just say, yeah, we have been doing a lot of episodes on counts, but it feels like a good way to explore history or literature or different aspects of society. So we might go down this route for a while and then eventually head on back to counter protest, counter culture. You never know. But that's another call. Please send us your ideas for counts or counters that you would like for us to cover. If you want to be a guest on the show, that's something we're open to as well, right?
If you're an expert in any kind of count-related thing, let us know. And we love interviewing experts because a lot of time we're kind of just making things up as we go and referencing things we learn on Wikipedia.
Yeah, and maybe you're really good at counting. We would like to hear from you. If you've made it past 100, I'd love to hear from you. I've never.
Okay, Ariel.
Okay, Shira.
Bye, you guys.
Goodbye.
Oh, that was good, Margo.
What did you want?
No, that was good. But just know that they don't get your facial expressions, you know?
Bye, Ariel and Margo.
Bye, Shira.
Oh, that was definitely in sync.
Yeah, definitely.
Bye.
I'll let you guys do the in sync goodbye to our counties then.
Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3. Bye, counties.
Wow, Ariel, that's what I dream of us being able to do in person one day.
One day.
One day soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.